We're back with more of Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. And here with me is Dr. Deirdre Nealon. She's an associate professor of bioethics and humanities and the editor of Upstate's award-winning literary and visual journal, The Healing Muse. Welcome, Deirdre. Thanks for coming in today.
Well, thanks for having me, Linda. I love to be here.
And I always enjoy your visits so much. So you're about to launch the 12th issue of The Healing Muse. That means you've been doing this for 12 years.
I know, dozen years. Isn't that amazing?
Amazing. But for those listeners who may not be as familiar, you know, with the publication, The Healing Muse, let's start out by just telling them a little bit about it. What exactly is it? What's your mission?
Our mission is to further, really, the mission of Upstate Medical University and its patient-centered care. And so it might seem strange that a literary and visual arts journal would be participating in patient-centered care. But actually, the focus of the journal is to open up a dialogue, a conversation between those people who take care of us when we are ill, whether they be the healthcare professional or our family members, and ourselves, we who are ill. And in the pages of our journal, all those voices are heard. And my hope is that as we distribute the journal throughout our hospitals here in Central New York and in physician and nurse practitioner offices, that patients will pick it up and look at it and see that there really is a place where people care to hear their stories.
And maybe they can feel not so alone
exactly.
In whatever it is that they face.
That's the key, Linda, right there, that we not feel so isolated when we hear the news about our illness.
Wow. Well, you also have some, besides the literary pieces, you have some visual pieces. Do you have artwork?
Yes, that's something that over the course of the 12 years, the journal has really gotten more powerful, I think, in terms of the art that we have received is so much better. And we have a wonderful design editor, Nancy Sharir. She does a fabulous job of putting these pieces together for us. So I think people who look at our journal, they'll be very pleasantly surprised, too, that they see painting, photography, sculpture. Everything is portrayed in here.
Wow, incredible. And within the literary part, you have poetry and prose, both.
Poetry and prose, yes.
Well, so you brought some stuff. Oh, well, before we go into that, tell me a little bit about where your entries come from so that our listeners understand.
Oh, our entries are coming from all over the world now, thanks to the web. We have a strong core support from Central New York area, but now California, Alabama, all around the United States, we have people who are sending us their work because they see the journal online. And we recently, in this issue, you will find people from England, France, and I think Russia. Although I might be wrong on this one. But at any rate, we are receiving, you know, people internationally now,
so
too.
So people can see the journal online at this point?
Yes. If you go to www.thehealingmuse.org, you will see the journal and our website. And there are certain entries that we allow you to take a peek at. We hope that you will buy the journal, obviously, but yes, that you can get a very strong sense of what we're looking for.
So you can buy the journal online then?
You can buy the journal online too, yes.
Wonderful. Okay, so let's get to what you brought us today. This is from the new 12th issue, and you brought us two poems and a little prose as well. Let's start with the first one.
Okay.
You always read it so beautifully, so.
Well, that makes me so nervous now, but all right, I'll try. We have a wonderful poet from Connecticut. Her name is Valerie Wofeld. And she won the Yale Younger Poets Award. That's a very prestigious award for a poet under the age of 30 a few years ago. And anyway, she has sent us a poem, and it's called I Made a Vessel. I made a vessel painted blue and gray. On the potter's wheel it spun round and round, therapy after a nervous breakdown. Like Adam, it began as dark red clay. The rim was cracked like a rose on a day of rain, petals scattered deformed without a sound. In blue and gray, it didn't bleed, this wound, and in the fire hardened its glazed underlay. I too had come through some elemental fire, injured like the little lip in ruin, and I too felt a mood of blue and gray. I too was clay and fire's accidental mix. Like this vessel I hold in my palm, I knew the calm after the flames' doomsday.
Wow. Oh.
Isn't that beautiful?
Incredible. Incredibly beautiful, but also so poignant.
It's very poignant, and yet it is exactly what our journal tries to encapsulate, and that is that we are not passive observers of what's happening to us in our lives. Whatever is going on, we can make the vessel. And in this, you know, beautiful poem, she compares the nervous breakdown that she tells us in that one line she had with what happened when she then began some, I guess you might call it art therapy, but when she began to make the clay vessel, and I would say when she began to make the poem, which then extends the healing to all of us so that we read that and feel, yeah, I can do it. I can come through fire.
Yeah, and I think what was interesting is that so often we feel first, I think I felt listening, this, you know, the angst of what she's experiencing, and then there's hope at the end. And it's a very uplifting poem at the end. So that's very, very positive. As I said, if people are reading it who are feeling alone, there's a sense of hope in that. So
good. That's exactly what we're hoping people will feel when they come to the end of that poem.
So how about the next one? That's so another poem.
The next poem comes from an artist poet, Mary Lou DiPietro. And she's from Massachusetts. And there's an interesting story with her, Linda. She's a friend of the woman whose art graces our cover. So every year we pick a cover artist. And we'll talk maybe the next time I visit with you about that artist. Her name is Marguerite McDonald. And Mary Lou DiPietro saw her painting. She tried to paint what the brain scan of herself looked like after she had been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And so there's this beautiful painting that we have a reproduction of in the book, and it's called Snow on the Brain. And Mary Lou has written the poem, What It Did for Her. So here it is, Snow on the Brain. The very first sighting was a fistful of specks, a flurry of confetti or ash. We call it snow on the brain, the doctor tells me, shrouding the truth in beauty and mystery and mesmerizing solace. He says it again, snow on the brain. But by now, I am drifting, drifting.
Oh, that's chilling.
Isn't it chilling? But it's beautiful. I mean, when our readers see this painting of snow on the brain, I mean, it looks exactly the way an MRI does when you get it back and they show you the scan. But she's colored it all in. It's a gorgeous painting. And yet you're right here in the poem, right with the person who's been diagnosed.
Wow.
And this part of medicine I love. I think this part of medicine is exactly why the journal is perfect at Upstate Medical University, because medicine uses metaphors. It uses language. We call it, says the doctor, snow on the brain when we see that slide.
Wow.
Isn't that great?
It's a great image. It's just a sad story in a way. So, and the way it ends, the poem ends with us just drifting, drifting.
Yes.
That one doesn't leave you on a very particularly uplifted level, but
no,
it does, but poignantly does make the point.
It does make the point. It does make the point. And I would say that, you know, she's gone on to create a lot of art. And so there is, as you always tell me, there's hope.
There's always hope.
Right?
There's always hope. Okay, I want to make sure we don't run out of time. So you brought us, actually, in its entirety, quite a long prose piece. But you said you would just excerpt it.
I'm just going to do some excerpts for you.
Great.
This one will lift up our mood, because we always get a couple of funny people. And this fellow is from Canada, speaking of international, our neighbor to the north, Kevin Bray. And he sent us a very funny essay. So this is for real, and it's about his hypochondria, okay? And it's called It's All in My Head. I think I am a hypochondriac, although I will seek a second or a third opinion until my fear is assuaged. My self-diagnosis is confirmed by the holy grail of online medical knowledge and the one place that I stop before going to my doctors to confirm my maladies, the Mayo Clinic Symptom Checker. So then he goes on and he describes what he finds in the Mayo Symptom Checker. Quote, frequently switching doctors. If one doctor tells you that you aren't sick, you may not believe it and seek out other opinions, unquote. But I'm supposed to do this, right? Every movie or television show or self-help book says, get a second opinion. Yet if I generate an iterative process and head off to see the nth doctor for the nth opinion, where n is greater than 6, then maybe I am a hypochondriac. But maybe I am also just lonely or having the bad luck of garnering medical opinions from doctors who are out of their depth and constantly refer me to another specialist until I see a doctor whose degree of specialty is so intense that they know more and more about less and less until they know everything about nothing.
Oh, geez.
Thinking you might have a disease and actually faking the thing are quite different problems. I also know this from the Mayo Clinic. All right, then I'm going to skip that part and jump to the... There are other illnesses that are probably just as real, but still waiting for a fifth opinion. For some, an opinion is not yet possible, since they are yet bulbs that haven't burst, seeds that must germinate, flowers that will soon blossom. I suspect that I have a cancer, skin being the most likely one. I spent most of the 70s in the sun and a good part of the 80s and 90s. I used tanning beds for a little while. About 2 years, but never enough to go beyond a subtle hue. Blotches are appearing near the corner of my eye where the sun baked the high ground of my cheekbones. I noticed a single Madagascar-shaped spot on my shoulder. Inside my lungs is buried fine and combustible sawdust inhaled in my teens, and layered over this are asbestos fibers that wafted through the air when I removed floor tiles from our swinging 60s bungalow 3 years ago. Can lung cancer be far off? There is a clicking noise in my head, very similar to the repetitive sound of a retractable pen being fiddled with by a nervous student. This comes and goes, but recently caught my attention at my 50th birthday dinner. The syncopation seems to coincide with my heartbeat, a sound that I wish to hear continue. But at night, when the distant burglar alarm is ringing in my ear, I dread the loud beating of this heart and try to associate it with imagined heavy footsteps on the second floor of the house. Better to think a real burglar is in the house than to accept impending cardiac arrest. I accept death. It will come, and I hope I'm asleep when it does. I should take sleeping pills every night just to make sure that I am unconscious when a massive coronary or a critical stroke fells me. The problem is that even though the Mayo Clinic symptom checker confirms many of the diseases I suspect I have, the possibility of an accident is significant, and I can't take sleeping pills while driving, swimming, or using chainsaws. This is my greater fear. I will be pushed across the River Styx by some cataclysmic force for which I had no warning. Using my background in mathematics, I compile statistics and create guesstimates from my deathspace.com to determine if I will be shot, T-boned at an intersection, fall from a motorcycle, or drown in a quarry. Quote, certain antidepressant medications may be helpful in treating hypochondria, unquote. See? Even if the other diseases that I have aren't real, then this one is, because a treatment is available. The drug and the disease are complementary. I used to worry that I might be a hypochondriac, and that by relentlessly pursuing a diagnosis, I would subject myself to harmful medical tests. But now I fret that I suffer from hypochondria and serotonin reuptake inhibitors. I hear these can cause suicidal thoughts or actions. I'm not prepared to confront self-destruction. Maybe I should just stop worrying and accept the inevitable. Is there a disease called plausible denial?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Kevin is very funny, and he goes on. You know, there's other parts in there, but you get the idea that there are people for whom the web has been not a godsend.
A disaster. I get the last line I loved when he said, maybe I should stop worrying. I remember the, I think it was a movie, Maybe I Should Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb
or
something.
Yes, 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 How I Learned to.
How I Learned to Stop Worrying. Oh, that was Dr. Strangelove.
It was.
Oh,
that's
my goodness.
That's right.
Well, this has that same very kind of dark, you know, ironic humor in it. But there's a lot of truth in some of this, too.
I think you'll hear from a lot of our physicians and nurses who say that so many patients come to the office with a sheet that they've printed out from the web that has all their symptoms.
And they're certain that they have not one disease, but many.
Many diseases.
Well, that's such a universal, and this whole thing is very universal. So I want to thank you so much for coming in and sharing once again these wonderful literary works and for doing this wonderful work for the journal. We'll have to have you back real soon.
Oh, I hope so,
to
Linda.
Hear more Thank wonderful you. Stuff. Thanks so much. My guest has been Dr. Deirdre Neal, an associate professor of bioethics and humanities and the editor of Upstate's award-winning literary and visual journal. Stay right with us. We'll be right back with more HealthLink on Air right after this short break.